The closing market report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123. Or email to Cooley at admworld.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for December 27, 2010. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kirk Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. And we'll take a look at cash grain with the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. In agricultural news, China is proposing new legislation on the management of genetically modified crops. We'll have that and other stories this half hour. And Todd Gleason explores whether climate change really will produce higher crop yields. It's all on the Monday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Here's how futures settled this Monday afternoon in Chicago and Kansas City. In Kansas City, March wheat, 843 and three quarters, down 1 1/4. May, 852 and a half, down a half. July, 857 and a half, down a quarter. March wheat at the board, 780 and a quarter, down 2 3/4. May, 807 and a quarter, down 3. July, 818 and 3/4, down 4 1/4. March corn, 615 and a quarter, up 1 1/4. May, 623, up 1. July, 626 and a half, up 3/4. December, 553 and a quarter, up 2. January beans, 1373, up 23 and a half. March, 1384 and a half, up 24 and a half. May, 1391, up 24. July, 1392 and 3/4, up 23 and a half. September, 1323 and a half, up 20. January soybean meal, 366.40, up 6.40. January soybean oil, 57.15, up 56. December live cattle, 104.90, up 90. January feeders, 120.70, down 75. And February lean hogs, 78.85, up 12 and 1/2 on the day. And that's Monday's settlements in Kansas City and Chicago. It's 2:09 p.m.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather highlights, he says a big warming trend likely will get underway during mid to late week this week. Late week temperatures may reach the 30s and 40s in the north and 50s with a few lower 60s in the south. Snow melt is possible in the lower Midwest during mid to late week. Strong cold fronts will bring showers and a possible thunderstorm to the Midwest briefly Friday into Saturday. Some rain showers will develop as warmer air debuts in the Midwest Wednesday and Thursday, but moisture totals are expected to be light. And it's anticipated to be much colder in the plains and western Midwest late this week and into the weekend.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities. He is in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Let's begin over on the livestock side, Kurt. We had a hogs and pigs report this afternoon, the quarterly variety. All hogs and pigs at 99 for breeding, 99 for market, 99. In fact, a lot of 99s across the board until you get to 180 pounds and over, where it equaled out at 100% of last year. Is there anything in here for us to chew on?
Well, the actual numbers you gave were fairly well in line with expectations. The thing is, when you look out on farrowing intentions on out down the road, it signals that maybe $6 corn's spooking the industry a little bit. We're looking at about 2% less on intention, so we'll have to monitor that, and that'll be a huge number as we move into the March quarterly report, see how the corn market does this winter, and see what the industry's reaction is to that. Hog producers are willing to work with the banker, and the banker will work with them, and they'll be good friends until, you know, we go 6 to 7 months of losses, and it'll be a different story if that does occur. One other observation, man, the big hits was down in Carolina, which signals big corporate money's probably putting a hold on expansion ideas there, Dave.
Is there any way to correlate what a 2% reduction in the herd might equate to corn prices?
Well, that's a good Darryl Good or Chris Hurt question, I think.
I thought maybe you might have some experience knowing
that. You caught me there. The thing we got to remember is corn feed use is a miscellaneous category. Mm-hmm. And whenever we have big production, except for this year, generally corn use is big. When we have small production, corn use is small. So it's really difficult to get a handle on true feed use on the corn side. Now, there's a few guys out there that have got some programs and some studies to do that. I don't have access to that, but it's a tough one to figure. The thing is though, exports should be on the rise to offset feed usage if it does lower. Then, too, we got the big GDD category, too, in the corn sector. So there's a lot of numbers you're going to have to juggle. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, to answer your question, is we need to see if that 2% gets bigger or smaller on that March report.
Let's turn our attention then to the grains. I spent a little bit of time taking a hard look at the January charts in beans, and it seems to me if go off the 210 low to the measuring gap that we saw in October and use that as a swing objective, you come up with a upside objective immediately at 1402 in the January soybean contract, and I don't see a reason why we wouldn't test that.
Yeah, it depends if you want to look at short-term, long-term. There's all kinds of different ways to read the charts. We did some more studies here throughout the day with mm-hmm. the bullish enthusiasm. And basically, you can actually swing this thing up clear to 1575. But before we get there, we're going to have some congestion, like we mentioned, by a buck higher when we talked around that 1450 area. But I would say, you know, continue to see problems in the southern hemisphere. We don't see the specialty money run away, that they'll probably be firm on up to those levels. But if we do go to those levels, you got to be a seller, because we're looking at a pretty sizable pullback during the month of February, a good correction before we get the big June-July rally clear up to $20.
What would you anticipate the correction being on? Why are you predicting that?
Well, you try to get some rhythm to the market. Cycle counts are kind of tough to get to work, but you use some Elliott wave and some cycles and so forth. We like to see some ups and downs. This thing could just keep grinding higher, and that's always the toughest one to get in rhythm with. But we feel it's going to be more of a 70s type of swinging market once we get through this move up ahead of the January crop report.
I did hear that 2-0 handle in that answer previously. Is that something that is in the realm of possibility, and if so, how much in the possibility do you think it is?
You know, anything's possible. You know, you look what crude oil's done and gold and so forth, and it's textbook perfect. You know, farmers pretty well sold out. He don't want to see it go higher. Guys have got hedges on, they don't want to see it go higher. You know, weather in the southern hemisphere. Last time we had weather in the southern hemisphere, Argentina had a half a bean crop. You know, we got food inflation in China, and they continue to dump reserves on the market, and the price keeps going higher. So it's a textbook classic. You know, everybody wants to break in here to buy it, and it, if we get the situation where we don't get any more moisture this spring and we run into some weather problems, just about anything's game. So I wouldn't rule out, you know, a huge up move. Chart says $20.20 to be exact during that time window. But, you know, you've got to have reason to push it that high, and it's going to have to be weather generated either here or China or some other major growing region that needs grain.
Turn our attention to corn. A word on that, which managed to inch higher today.
I think it was kind of a victim of the spread. I think the trade was more fired up, excited about beans. I think clients were called and said, hey, we got weather problems in South America. And so they bought the beans and to hedge their bet a little bit, maybe sold a little corn. Also, too, wheat was lower, and I think that kept the lid on the corn market, per se. And ongoing quality concerns about the Argentine crops probably got the corn market a little in the consolidation type of trade due to more feed wheat being put in the world market here as we move down the road. But corn's had a good run. There's no reason for it to correct substantially here until we see what the January crop report shows us.
Thank you, Kurt.
Have a good one. Thanks.
That's Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, and he is in Normal, Illinois.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
In agricultural news, China's National People's Congress, or Parliament, is proposing legislation on the management of genetically modified food. The legislation will cover the import and export of GMO food and production, development, and research of GMO grains. China's Ministry of Environmental Protection is preparing a law on overall GMO safety, while Parliament's Agriculture and Rural Affairs Committee is proposing a law specifically about GMO food. China is the largest producer of GMO cotton, but it has been much more cautious about accepting GMO food than some other nations. Last year, the Ministry of Agriculture's Biosafety Committee gave the first safety approval for GMO strains of rice and corn, paving the way for a large-scale commercial production of those GMO strains within 2 to 3 years. But the approval has caused controversy in the country about whether the GMO strain of rice, the staple food for 1.3 billion people, is safe. The U.S. Congress has approved a 6-week renewal of duty-free treatment for goods from Colombia and Ecuador, but will allow similar benefits for about 130 other countries to expire. The extension provides just enough time for flour exporters in Colombia to fill U.S. orders for the February 14th Valentine's Day holiday without being hit by tariffs. The short-term fix also renews trade adjustment assistance for 6 weeks. That program provides funding to retrain workers who have lost their job because of trade competition. USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack says that USDA should have been seeking better balance between biotechnology and organic production before lawsuits locked up the department's regulatory process over Roundup Ready alfalfa and sugar beets. Vilsack says, quote, "This is a discussion because of technology obviously being adopted very rapidly by American agriculture, while at the same time we're seeing this explosion of farmers who want to be able to plant organically. What we have now in both the alfalfa and sugar beet circumstances is the courts intervening and restricting the rights of what some people want to do with their lands. Finding some regulatory middle ground for biotechnology crops will be a major initiative for USDA throughout 2011. USDA's effort to deregulate Roundup Ready alfalfa sparked a court battle in 2006 that led to the U.S. Supreme Court making its first ruling in the arena of biotech crops. It ruled 7-1 in favor of Monsanto Company that a federal judge should not have issued a nationwide injunction banning farmers from growing Roundup Ready alfalfa. The Buenos Aires Grain Exchange says Argentina's 2010-11 soybean area will be 18.5 million hectares, about 1% smaller than previously forecast due to dry conditions in some areas. The exchange says dry conditions are affecting several areas of the soy belt, adding that no significant rains are forecast for the coming days, and high temperatures could worsen the situation. In the same report, the exchange held its outlook for commercial use corn area at 3.15 million hectares and left unchanged its forecast for 2010-11 wheat production of at least 13.5 million tons. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. There has been some long-drawn conclusions that one of the benefits of climate change might be higher crop yields. It seems a small consolation, but as Todd Gleason reports, one that isn't panning out when taken from theory to reality.
Lab experiments prove plants do better when more CO2 is around. That's carbon dioxide. And while most haven't taken much solace from that laboratory fact, it has given the world some hope as it relates to climate change and crop production. Climate change is coming along with higher CO2 levels, which, by the lab theory, should stimulate yields. There's a problem with the theory. It does not seem to translate into higher crop yields in field experiments. University of Illinois Professor of Crop Sciences Steve Long has been field testing the lab results for several years in an experiment called Soy Face.
Well, now that we have experiments where we can actually elevate the carbon dioxide level in a very controlled way in a farmer's field, we're not seeing those stimulations in the field. And that is of concern because that stimulation is one of the factors which is expected to offset the more damaging aspects of climate change in considering global food production.
The experiment Long operates at the University of Illinois is called Soy Face, or soybean-free air concentration enrichment. He grows crops outdoors in the field, but alters the atmosphere for higher levels of carbon dioxide and ozone, higher temperature, and controls the water supply. Soy Face was designed to discover the effects of atmospheric change on the agronomy and productivity of Midwestern crops, as well as to find solutions that will lead to crops better adapted to the climate of the future. What Long has found, again, is that the projected crop yield increases, supposed to come with higher CO2 levels, just are not there.
I wouldn't say it's not true at all, but we're only seeing, in these large field-scale experiments, we're only seeing with soybean and wheat and rice, we're only seeing about half of the response that was expected and half the response that has been used in predictions of future food supply.
It's not the silver lining in climate change that scientists, like Illinois Professor Long, had expected.
It's certainly not the silver lining we were expecting. On the other hand, if we can show that plants can do this in the laboratory, then we really need to understand, well, why isn't this happening in the field? Are there factors we could be selecting for genetically that would overcome this so that we would get the theoretical gain? What we have found here with our work on soybean is that there is variability between cultivars. So it appears there must be some genes which do favor this response.
That is to say, there are some varieties of soybeans that thrive in CO2-rich environments. The good news is that the soyface experiment is helping to determine which genetic variabilities in the plant are most likely to result in a better yielding soybean for the future. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Joining us now with cash grain analysis is Lisa Jones of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Lisa.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Question I have for you is based on maybe a 5-year historical level or something along those lines, how far along are producers who use the elevator in their new crop marketings?
I would say very small. We saw some guys that got started here this afternoon. As we get closer to higher levels on the D11 board, a lot of guys had a 550 level in mind, but I think guys are holding back. They got stuck this year in the fact that they had a lot of grain marketed. We're thinking they were somewhere between 60 and 65% sold on the corn, and then when yields started coming in, we're somewhere closer to 80, 85%, and then watch prices rally through that. So I think a lot of guys that typically sell ahead have either put it in some kind of an automated pricing tool or used an option strategy. I think in terms of straight hedging, it's been fairly minimal until we start getting to this 550 level, and then we've seen some open orders get filled by producers.
So this pricing tool, are producers hopeful, wanting, desiring a $6 handle for corn?
I think that's kind of the number they have in mind. I think a guy just wants to have an opportunity to have something that's a little more fluid. I think that'll be what's most important going into 2011. I think for a $6 level, we'll probably see a guy put some more straight hedges on. But until we get to that, I mean, we've seen some at 550. I think 6 will be the next target.
And in the hedging, what is the most popular strategy at the moment?
Most guys are just doing a straight December, in terms of corn, doing a straight December 11 hedge. The carryout has been so small, you know, a 7.5 spread. We'll look for full carry to be somewhere between 16 and 18. So I think most guys are just planning on straight hedging December 11 futures and then rolling it out. Haven't seen a lot of guys attach basis. We're 35 under for fall 2011 corn for next year, and I think we'll see that improve.
What about soybeans? What are people doing there?
Soybeans have been pretty light, same kind of thing. We've only got about 3.5 cents from that Nova 11 to Jan 12 spread. So same kind of thing, just straight hedging, using just the HDA fee in terms of hoping that 40 under basis for fall of 11 will improve between now and then.
Do you think that basis will firm between now and the end of the year?
Absolutely, I do. I mean, we've seen, so in terms of a nearby basis, we've seen some train movement that was kind of desired for elevators in this area. I think the only thing that will change that scenario is we continue to get these rallies in futures. You'll see the elevators start to back that basis off just because the cash price is still so attractive.
Very quickly, then, your prices today.
For December 10, corn, 607. Dece 10, beans, 1367. Fall of 11, corn, 518. Fall of 11 beans, 1245.
Thank you very much, Lisa.
Thank you.
That's Lisa Jones of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. I'll be back in 2 minutes with a look at agricultural weather. It's National Fruitcake Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1741, Jean Bourne was born, the inventor of the sugar granulating process. He also was founder of the sugar industry in Louisiana. In 1822, Louis Pasteur was born, a French scientist. He showed that microorganisms were responsible for disease, food spoilage, and fermentation. He developed the process for killing those organisms by heat, called pasteurization. He also developed vaccines for anthrax and rabies. In 1867, William Cecil Dampier was born, a British scientist, agriculturalist, and science historian. He developed a method of extracting lactose from surplus whey, a process that was used on a commercial scale during the cheese shortage in Britain during World War I. He also conducted experiments for more efficient means of production on farmland. In 1931, Dampier was knighted for his public service in agriculture. In 1923, Michael Owens died, an American glass manufacturer. He invented the automatic glass bottling making machine that revolutionized the industry. And in 1968, Victor Shelford died, an American zoologist and ecologist. He was one of the first to treat ecology as a separate science. And that's This Day in Agricultural History. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us for our look at the agricultural weather is meteorologist Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon, Drew.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Let's begin down in South America today, where we understand that Argentina will be very hot.
It will. It's going to be dry, too, and just a steady decline in crop conditions likely, especially in the southern half of the country, including Buenos Aires and parts of La Pampa, as well as southwestern Cordoba. This is about maybe 25% of the corn country and a fairly large portion of sunseed area that's being impacted. They are already too dry before we even start this next seven-day period. And it's over the next 7 days that we'll see no rain and temperatures in the 90s to lower 100s on a daily basis. Now, a little bit of shower activity may occur in the far southwest corner of that country, but there will not be many areas that benefit from it. And so the stress levels on these crops will be becoming increasingly higher. Now, some of the early corn crop is already reproducing, and so you put all this together and you come up with the end result of being a loss in production potential. There is a second crop or a later corn crop that is produced, and it still has potential to see better weather, but it too will be stressed for a while. Meanwhile, further north in soybean country and in sorghum country, there was some beneficial rain that occurred last week at about this time. Those crops up there are hanging in there at the moment, but after the next 7 days, they too will be stressed, and the need for rain will be pretty high.
Turn your attention to Brazil, which essentially until now has had pretty much perfect growing conditions, but I guess it can't remain perfect forever.
That's a good way to put it, I think. We need to also remember back a few weeks ago, the seasonal rains were late in coming into Brazil, and that actually hurt a little bit of their production potential. So even though it's been perfect growing season, Since then, the late planting in the northern areas has probably hurt a little bit of their yield. Now, you are absolutely right. The conditions have been really good, and we are seeing a change now. The southern portions of Brazil will see a below-average precipitation bias now for the next week, and I really think that we'll see that last into a second week of the outlook. The early morning forecast model suggested better rains would occur in southern Brazil next week. I'm not completely convinced that that will evolve, but certainly over the next 7 days, we'll see a decrease in soil moisture, some warmer temperatures like that, which is occurring in Argentina. In other words, 90s and temperatures getting up close to 100 will be possible in Rio Grande do Sul and in areas northward into Paraguay and maybe western Paraná and also southwestern Mato Grosso do Sul. Now, they have good soil moisture today, so a week from now, they'll begin to see the stress. So what happens in the week of January 3rd will really have a lot to say about what's going to take place as we move deeper into January.
You mentioned rain. I can't believe I'm saying this, but it's going to rain later this week here in Illinois?
It is, actually. We're going to turn quite a bit warmer for a couple of days in the second half of this week. And there is a fairly good chance that we're going to see a strong cold front come barreling across the plains and into the Midwest. And when these two air masses meet up, we're going to end up with not only some rain, but a possibility of an isolated thunderstorm or two.
Thanks, Drew.
Have a great day.
Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And that's today's closing market report. You can listen to the show again on our website at willag.org or subscribe to the podcast in the right navigation window. This is Dave Dickey.